It seems that I ate my way through the day of Friday, January the 13th. The morning was routine desk work, and then I had promised to try to spirit Ashton off to a surprise birthday luncheon at Patsy Cheney's. I asked her to ride with me. I was going somewhere, and we could talk over such and such a problem. Partway there, she asked, "Where are we going?" A gentle person and such a joy to have around. We went to Patsy and Buzzy's efficiency apartment. Really, just one large room, kitchenette and bath, with a homemade panel wall screening off their bed. It's living just like the pioneers did in a one-room log cabin, except this one is 6 floors up in a city of 2.5 million, and it was made charming by many books and pictures. It was just Patsy and Buzz and Ashton and Willie Day and I, with waffles because they're my favorite and I never have them, and pizza because that's Ashton's favorite. I could stay only an hour. So we ate promptly, all chattering at once. Patsy looks so happy. She's going to have a baby. Buzz is thinking about going back into the ministry, and for that purpose had gone to be interviewed by about 4 congregations, in each instance being asked by the elders, or whatever they're called, the first question, "What is your feeling about civil rights?" Actually, his feeling had been in favor of civil rights, but he was a little surprised and not very sympathetic that that should be the first and major question asked, because it was the church he'd meant to go to work for, and not some social service group. I felt strangely humble. I had been removed from this sort of life for only a few years, and I had forgotten how very nice people live on modest incomes when they're young and starting out. Lucy's tiny apartment, and when I say that she always lifts her chin angrily, seemed not so tiny anymore, and the problems of very little money seemed imminent. I ate and ate and ate, and then I hurried back for the 1:15 meeting with Alan Boyd, head of the transportation department, and Lowell Bridwell, his number one man, and Turner, who may be the head of the Bureau of Public Roads, succeeding Rex Whitten, and Everett Hutchinson, who fits somewhere into the hierarchy, Liz and Sharon Francis, to be joined by Lyndon when he could. He was nearly an hour late, and we covered thoroughly the role of the Department of Transportation and the Bureau of Public Roads in the program of beautifying highways, the $80 million we have to spend this year, the $160 million we hope to have to spend next year, the whole 10-year program, the difficulties and legislation that will face us in the climate of this upcoming Congress, and most especially the guidelines on outdoor advertising, which had been laid down after hearings in all the states and finally determined by the Secretary of Commerce. On lines generally rather satisfactory to the conservationist, the aesthetics people, but a target for the outdoor advertising people to strongly oppose. It takes no crystal ball to know we will have trouble maintaining even the foot in the door we have. It seems, however, that removing or screening the junk yards is not nearly so controversial. Lyndon came close to 2:30, and gave us a really inspiring talk, for which I loved him. He was bearing witness to his administration that he was in earnest about this. He expected something of them. He was going to back them in it. He talked about the highway parks, which he had built when he was head of the NYA back in 1936, of what a pleasant part of the Texas highway systems they had become. Approved, enjoyed, much used, and the state proud of them. Well, whatever little footprints we make across this country, there'll be more for this 30 minutes of Lyndon's time. I was grateful, and they were all impressed. And I, more impressed with Alan Boyd, as he outlined every problem, gave the reasons on both sides. He's a good appointment, I believe. Lyndon left, still without lunch, a little before 3, and I said goodbye to the men at straight up 3. To go to the diplomatic entrance to meet Prince Juan Carlos of Spain and Princess Sophia. There was a phalanx of photographers, and we smiled and shook hands with each other over and over, and then up to the yellow room with Jimmy and Sylvia Symington, where the fire was burning merrily and the tea table was laid, and Linda soon came in and joined us, and we had a very pleasant hour and a quarter. We talked of their travels through America. The princess was glowing in her description of education in America, and Prince Juan Carlos, especially of his visit to the Air Academy. Linda talked about her visit to Spain, and I was so proud when she entered so knowledgeably into discussions of Goya and Velázquez and El Greco, and where certain paintings were. It was an easy, pleasant, laughing visit, which is why we all let it go on so long. Just below the surface of my mind, I was thinking, we have our troubles, but it must be something of a strain for this nice young man to read all the time that Franco and a large segment of Spain want him to be the king when Franco hands down the power, because he is considered more malleable more conservative, whereas there's another segment of the population that wants his father because they expect him to be liberal. I suppose everyone around whom there's the aura of power is goaded and pushed and sometimes maneuvered into hostilities that sometimes never really existed. So I ate my way through another tea time. And then when the prince and princess left, Tyler Abel was waiting for me to talk about the Karnak post office, bringing another drawing, much nicer looking, and the suggestion that perhaps some good architect could be found by him, devote a few days to it pro bono publico and without publicity, but try to achieve the best design that we can to set something of a standard in the little town of Karnak. Later, I bowled three games alone for exercise, and I phoned Warren Woodward and Eloise and asked them to have dinner with us. And Jim Kane, who was our house guest, came a little before 8. Woody, ebullient, successful. Eloise, full of news about her work on the committee for the deaf. Linda Bird came in looking very lovely in a black and white chiffon with huge silver balls for earrings on her way to the Spanish embassy for a dinner dance for the prince and princess. Lyndon was very late coming to dinner, 9:30, weary and rather quiet, though happy to see these special friends. But he left us at 10:30 when we started down to see A Man for All Seasons, and he had to tackle his own beast, night work, which grows thicker and less susceptible to happy answers. It was 12:30 when the movie was over, one of the best I've seen. I went to bed and read a little, and presently Linda came in and curled up on the bed with me, and I wanted to hear every bit about what a dance for a prince was like. She danced a good deal with Senator Teddy Kennedy, whose back injury apparently no longer bothered him. She bet a dollar with Eunice Shriver that Mallorca belonged to Spain, and she'd won it. The guests had been the gay young people of the town, diplomatically divided between the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration, represented by the Fowlers and the Freemans and the Connors and the Carpenters and Abels. And the evening probably made more gingery by the presence of Salvador Dali, who's doing a portrait of Juan Carlos, about which Juan Carlos had been very amusing at tea. But the nicest thing of all was that Linda was excited, as one should be when one is 22 and goes to a dance for a prince and princess. And that is the real stuff of life. Are the children happy? And is your husband doing a job well?